All right. Good morning, everyone. It is just about a minute or two late, and I think we have enough members present that I'm going to go ahead and call us to order. And Nicole will do the roll call.
Joella Sport?
Yes.
Claudia Pope?
Yes.
Kit Beasy?
Yes.
Robert Mackey? Evelyn Tinsgaard? Annie Fritzy? Sarah Batiste? Deb Jepson? Mary Alice Short? Kevin Lawson? Debbie Gonzalez?
Here.
Kayla Hansen? Nicole Klupfer?
Present.
Carolyn Simmons? Debbie Coxon? Gary Newman?
Here.
Jennifer Elhard?
Here.
Jennifer Harris? Mary Sue Date?
Present.
Brian Keeble? Jim Eames? Robin Winant?
Here.
Jed Lowell?
Excuse me, we can barely hear you online.
John Clendenin?
Here.
Jennifer Youngberg?
Here.
Walker Wheeler?
Present.
Brad Crick?
Here.
Pat Williams?
Here.
Jeanette Altman? Travis Brinzo? Richard Machida?
Here.
Britton Anderson? Is there anybody whose name I did not call?
Well, for the moment, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a quorum. Do we have anyone else online? I only have three people acknowledging that they're online.
This is Catherine Williams. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you say that again, please?
Catherine Williams. Because I have my volume turned all the way up, and I can barely hear you guys.
We can sure hear you.
Oh, yay.
And we have Nicole and Jennifer. Anyone else? Okay. All right. Well, given that, and that was a concern of mine, having it this early in August, whether or not we would have a quorum, that, as you all may know or understand, we can't take an action. May I ask who joined us?
This is Jed Lowell.
All right. Thank you. You gave us a quorum. Single-handedly, thanks.
All right.
All right. So we have a quorum. The next item on the agenda is the approving of today's agenda, meeting number 230. Everyone have a look at that. Let me know if there's anything you want added or explained or rearranged.
Move to approve.
Goodness sakes. Any opposed? Any further discussion? Good, we have an agenda. Yes, I'm a little more casual than Pip. Approval, that's a good thing she's here today to defend herself if necessary.
My prime motivation.
Approval of minutes for Staff Council Meeting 229.
Approve.
Did I hear a second?
Yes.
Any Any discussions or comments, changes? We have a motion to approve. All right, hearing none, all those opposed to approving the minutes as presented. Great, we have minutes for 229. Thank you. All right, under item 2 on the agenda, status of pending actions, is making you all aware that Spencer Rogers approved our motion to amend the Constitution, our changes to the Constitution regarding staff council representation on staff alliance. That's just an FYI to you all. It's been approved. Our next item is public comment, but we are about 5 minutes early. 10 minutes early to that, I believe May might be here for public comment, but if you don't mind waiting, so we'll stay at the 9 o'clock. Thank you. We'll move to item 4, officer reports. Just to let you all know, Staff Alliance met last week in their annual president's retreat, and that is the elected president or vice president and vice president or their designees from each campus staff council and the statewide staff assembly. I was reelected chair of Alliance. The peanut gallery is alive and well. It was a good meeting. We had some good discussion, but part of that meeting was my telling my vice president, Claudia, and the vice chair, Monique Music, was reelected as vice chair, that they were going to have to share the load with me this year. So my president's report is going to be brief. Quite often I'm going to leave it to Claudia to report to you all, and I'll fill in blanks and answer questions if necessary, but it's my way of making sure that the vice president and the vice chair of Alliance can step in, not present, or and so on, is by shifting the reporting function to them. It also helps with because I'm kind of in the fray, in the thick of it, sometimes she's going to give a perspective that might surprise me, so that's another reason for doing it, is keeping myself on my toes. Beyond that, the other thing we're going to try to do is push discussion of items that are listed later in the agenda to that time. So I won't report on them, and Claudia may not report on them until we actually get to that point, part in the agenda. So at this point, unless you have any questions, of course, Gary.
Not meaning to be of course, but I had asked something, I can't remember, 2 or 3 meetings ago, about seeing about getting their website up to date with minutes.
Right.
Have some info on progress.
Right. What I can tell you is that there is now no one in that office. Friday is the last day of the last member of that office. We will be using Dana Thomas's administrative assistant to cover governance until we hire an executive officer. That position description has yet to be approved. It's in process. Then, of course, comes the recruitment period, and then them coming on board. So, for probably a month, maybe even 6 weeks,
go ahead.
There will be
I'm
no
just
one
listening
in that
to
office,
the staff council
so I don't
meeting.
See necessarily.
Yes, just logged in, so I have no idea what they're talking about.
I'm sorry, we have someone online.
Oh, do you? What do I need to find?
Oh, is it timesheet?
Well, this is Marla and Janine. Wrong. Oh, yes, I understand.
No, that is definitely on their to-do list. Each of the Alliance chairs, the coalition, gave a list of issues that they had that needed to be worked on, and reported that to Dana Thomas.
Saying under Thomas.
And then that one right there.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, what?
Well, after it got moved out from under the president's hat, it went to the Chancellor for Academic Affairs.
Yes.
Apparently governance thing.
Actually, that's still up for discussion. It's possible. They've opened it up again. That it's possible that the governance office and
I don't know.
Go under Carla Beam.
There.
President of Pre-University Relations. Alliance voted last week to keep it under Dana.
I think Anita did. Karen's not
met with
that
one.
Right. Okay.
Times,
cool.
And,
so I changed.
Think,
yeah.
You know, there was even some discussion, of course, of splitting up the governance. Staff governance going to Carla Beam,
okay.
And the students and faculty staying with Dana Thomas as academic affairs. But we decided that that was not in the best interest of governance and, of course, the staff to separate the functions. So I believe it's going to stay under Dana, but it is still up for discussion. It hasn't been approved yet by President Gamble. Yep. Any other questions then for myself before I hand it over to Claudia?
No, but this is Jennifer, and I just wanted to say that the only person I can hear online is you, Joella, and the person just talking about timesheets. So I was wondering if maybe the people in the room could speak into the microphone or have them moved when they do speak.
I'm assistant to the Vice Chancellor for Research right now, and he approved that I keep doing this as the Vice President of the Staff Council. He's very supportive. But, of course, it's a steep learning curve for both of us. So, like I said, I jumped right in. We had our first, I led the first admin meeting. I went to leadership meeting. We had the staff aligned. 2 days, we had the pre-staff meeting with the chancellor. So I'm getting, hopefully, learn all the issues. And when we met with the chancellor, he explained that we're only getting the 2% tuition increase that they're asking the students, that the funds are pretty limited, and it doesn't look like we're going to get the steep salary increase that we hope for. But I think we're going to discuss that a little later more. And then at the Staff Alliance meeting, we met 2 days, like Stella said. Dana Thomas came in, and the president came in the afternoon, and then we had a regular meeting at the Staff Alliance. And the Staff Alliance up that we decided to do a survey for the entire UA staff. And it's modeled after the Chronicle for Higher Education survey on great colleges to work for. And you're going to see it pretty soon, but questions are like respect and appreciation. And then we ask, the quote, our recognition and award program are meaningful to me. And then they can say, I agree, I disagree, or something in between. Or another one is benefits. The institution benefits, healthcare, tuition waiver benefits, meets my needs. It's like 20 questions, so once we send it out, you're going to see it all. And that will probably give us a great overview how the staff feels, and then we can focus on those areas that everybody wants to change something on.
Is this UAF or system-wide?
System-wide. Oh, yeah. No,
and when
everybody.
Will that be coming out, do you think?
Hmm?
When will that be coming out?
I just put the monkey survey together yesterday, then everybody wants to approve it, and then hopefully it's out by the 22nd of August, and then we close it by the 5th of September. So, pretty soon.
Right, we will, as soon as we finalize it at the Alliance level, we'll announce it to the individual councils to put the word out, and then we'll work with the individual campus marketing to get the word out as well. We as an FYI, and I think I told you, for the WEN survey that we did last spring, we had 1,000 responses. I would really like to see 1,000 responses on this campus or work life survey for staff as well.
If you want to look at it, I only have one copy, but you can pass it around. And if you have a better idea, probably we can put more than just I strongly agree, I agree, and I disagree. If you come up with more, let me know. That's the first draft. And then, like Joella said, the Vice President, Dana, came in, and he was, and she already talked about that they're looking for the executive officer who's going to be the liaison between the governance and the administration, and they asked somebody from Staff Alliance to be on the hiring committee once it's finally out there, and they're also thinking about hiring somebody, like, they're also they're hiring more like what Kim was.
A coordinator level. So our hope is the executive officer position, and which they've agreed to and are going forward with, but our hope is once they fill that they'll hire a coordinator that will, in addition to the executive officer. But yeah, I'm hearing mixed signals on that. It might end up being a one staff office with a couple of students.
So the other thing Dana reported on was that he's in the process of reviewing all the Board of Regents policies, and the proposed revisions can all be found on his website, and that everybody can go out and look and see if you have any input. And then they also laid out the budget process, and Michelle Rusick came. She's Associate Vice President for Finance, and they said that there is no placeholder in place right now for a staff increase, and that with the enrollment increase, the enrollment numbers not being that high, and with the low tuition increase this year, that the funds are pretty limited, the same like the chancellor said. And then the president came in, and he reported...
Claudia, could you move closer to the microphone? We can't hear you on the conference call.
And he said the themes are not set in stone yet, even if they came out all the time, and it looks like it, and input is still welcome. And everybody's seen the five project themes pretty much?
Did you see them? Did you read that email, that bulk email that came out to everyone and their mother and cousin and listed the five draft initiatives? Okay. The thing to stress that is that those are draft, that those are still up for discussion. There was some confusion with that announcement that those were the themes and set in stone and off we go. They are not.
And other things he discussed, he said that he was in the early stages of developing a better staff development program, and he wanted our input, what he thinks what we need and what we want and what we need. So look at that one. And the other thing is coming out again is the performance evaluations. He wants to roll them. He's working on them, and he wants to roll them out. First, get the input, and then roll them out.
Claudia, this is the president or the chancellor?
The president.
Thanks.
That was a staff line. Yeah. And that's what I have for him.
Any questions for what she's reported on?
I guess I just have one question. So are we revising the performance evaluation again? is that what I'm understanding the comments to be?
Yes. Essentially, he has said in a couple of different places that he did not like that form, does not like the form that we spent a couple of years working on, and that he has a form in mind. And at Alliance, he asked to sit down with me and have a preliminary conversation about the form, and then he'll put it out formally to Staff Alliance and of course, our staff councils for input. Keep in mind, my suggestion at the time when he first broached this last spring was, that's great. Are you also going to include a fair system for rewarding excellence? If you want to evaluate our performance, are you going to give us a fair system for rewarding it? And he wasn't sure what I meant, so I described the current situation. Some departments have money and some don't. And so if you have an outstanding performer in one department that doesn't have the funds, that person won't get a bonus or won't get an in-grade adjustment. And so on, which is inherently and so my suggestion for him was to consider a match so that the chancellors, for example, have to give into a common pot a 1%, I'm making numbers, of salary saving. When a position's vacant, they get salary saving from that position. And then the president matches that, and there's a fair system for rewarding excellence. Everyone has equal access to that pot. Just a starting point for discussion, certainly not gone any farther than that, but I strongly suggested if you're going forward improving your performance evaluation tool and requiring people to follow Board of Regents policy, which is that we all get annual evaluations, then you should also put together a better system for acting on those evaluations. One second, Gary. The other side of that is you should reward excellence, have a fair system for that, but then you should also have a fair and clear, transparent process for grievances that come out of those evaluations. So we've had that conversation as well. Gary, you had a question?
Just real quickly, one of the things that we worked real hard to try to get in the last form was to make sure that employees had an opportunity to feedback on supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that's still on the table.
I hope so, too. I have not sat down with him yet, and I've not seen the document that they're apparently working from, but I will keep that in the queue. Mary Sue, does that answer your question?
It does, but I do have one other question. I'm not pertaining to the evaluation. I've heard that Dana Thomas is going to be retiring at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case? And if that's the case, how is that going to affect everything that he is in the process of?
Well, I can tell you that he is actually now officially no longer interim. He is the Vice President of Academic Affairs and resigned his position here at UAF. What their plans are for his position, I don't know. We have not had the opportunity to meet with the Chancellor since that announcement, and I've not heard a I've not had that conversation with Dana. Another thing that you should be aware of, and I hope that you all see the impact of this, Donald Smith, who was our interim Chief HRO Officer and Director of Labor Relations for Statewide, has now been made the permanent Chief HRO Officer. And they are going to go out and recruit for a Director of Labor and Employee Relations that will report to him. So, yeah. So you're aware of that, and that affects us a great deal. The Chief HRO Officer is who I will meet with regularly to talk about, you know, our compensation, our work environment, our grievance process, and so on. Everything related to us will go through him. Also, I'm not sure if you're all aware that Chris Racina has accepted another position within the administration, and Brad Lobland is now the director of UAF HR.
Is he interim or is he?
Looking at his title, there's no interim in there. Oh, well, then he needs to change his title. And Eder, the title giver, says he's permanent. So in any case, that changes things a great deal. Who we're working with on our concerns and issues at the campus level and then on up at the statewide level as well. Yes?
Back on evaluations, in the interim, is there a specific form that is used, and what is the expectation for that? Is it still annual? Because I'm not sure that really happens.
Oh, it does not happen. It is annual. And their statewide has their form that they blessed. However, they did not turn around and make it a mandatory form. You still have flexibility in the form that you use. What's that?
You can use whatever you want, apparently.
Pretty much. I mean, HR, our UAF HR, I think, has a couple of different forms. The last time I visited their site, they had a couple of different forms. And then statewide just has that one form. And it does have a supervisor component. Any other questions? And then with that, we'll move back. My apologies. I think it's late on public comment. Someone needs to kick me under the table. Oh, Mary Sue?
I just have one more question. Where the SurveyMonkey is concerned, are people going to be able to provide their comments and their feedback anonymously,
yes,
or are we going to have to sign in?
No. It will be an open survey.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. That's part of why we moved it to SurveyMonkey, so that there would be no issues from any, whether it was UA Southeast or UA Anchorage or UAF, and then of course we'll hopefully to alleviate concerns that about it being anonymous or not. Yes. So if there are no other questions, I'm going to go to public comment. And May, is it your wish? Yes. For those that aren't aware, this is May Marsh, our EEO officer and director of. I'm sorry if there's a different title, May.
Diversity and Democracy.
There you go.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I wanted to come out and let everybody know that you're going to be seeing some changes with Diversity and Equal Opportunity. First of all, we are relocating. They have put some funding into upgrading the Nortec Center, or the Nortec House, so we'll be moving over there. Probably starting next week is when we'll make the move, to be finished sometime in September. It is over close to Hess Village, McLean. So we move.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a nice little place. And if they put a little lipstick on it, I think it'll be easier for people to come and file complaints. You don't have to walk past the chancellor's office to get to me. So I think if, you know, in that way, it's a better location. The other thing that you're going to see is some restructure. What I'm doing is I'm looking at OMAD will not be there. Don Foley will be moving into the OMAD as part of all these moves. And I'm looking at turning the Women's Center into a resource center. And so it would be the point of contact that can provide information on where we're located or information on any other services that may be needed by, you know, students or faculty or employees. So we won't be losing any of our functions. You know, we've picked up this additional function of diversity, and we're trying to figure out how we can do it all with the staff that we currently have. So with the with OMAD, the events will be moving over here to the Woods Center, and everything else will go with us to the Northgate House except for that outreach portion, which will stay in Eielson. Then the time that we get or we're gaining or saving will be put toward looking at our policies and practices to ensure that we are offering opportunities to everyone.
I just have a question. I see that diversity has moved into the title of CEO.
Right.
But what about everything that the Women's Center did and that staffing and their outreach? What is going to be going on?
Any concerns that you have, give me specific concerns and I will answer them, because our objective is to not drop any of those services.
I don't have specific.
Yeah.
I just know that there have been some staff concerns, so
yeah.
I will delve into that.
Yeah, just tell me what they are and we'll figure out how to handle it.
Okay.
And I would appreciate it if you copy me and if you do that in writing. Thanks, Mary Sue.
Out of curiosity, with that new location, past has always become. What they doing?
Well, the building, we still have the problems with accessibility. However, what we're doing is we're putting out on our website and we're putting signs outside. If somebody has a mobility issue and cannot get into the building, we can meet with them in the Women's Center.
I'm sorry, I have two questions. The first question is, what's OMAD?
The Office of Multicultural
Affairs and Diversity.
Oh, okay, thank you. And the second question, would signs outside the Nordic House be useful if you've made your way to the Nordic House only to find that it's not accessible? I don't mean to make that sound mean. It just sounds like that might be a sticking point in case anyone ever visits and discovers that maybe they can't get in for some reason or can't easily get in. I don't know where else you'd put signs, yeah.
We'll put it outside there. We'll have signs at, you know, at our resource center. And, you know, they can call us. It's on our website. If you have any other ideas on how to get out the word, I'm very open to that. I encourage your feedback.
Or maybe are there, you know, plans to renovate it in the, you know, in the near or longer term to add that?
This is a temporary move.
Okay.
We can only be in there 3 years without creating accessibility to that building.
Okay.
If anybody, you know, would like me to come out and give us the complete briefing on what we're doing, I'd be happy to do that, and we're open to any feedback.
Any other questions? All right. We may actually, I haven't yet to talk to Jennifer Reynolds, who's the Faculty Senate President. There have been some issues raised regarding these moves. I'll meet with her, and we may ask May to come back for the September meeting.
Happy to do that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment online? Okay, we'll move then to item 5, which is the remarks by the Chancellor. The Chancellor is unable to join us. He's traveling today unexpectedly, just in case he pops on. I did actually forget a couple of things in my report that I wanted to bring up. May I ask who joined us? They don't want to. Oh, is it muted still? Okay. All right. Can someone online speak up so we know we can hear you?
This is Ryan Keel.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
One thing that is out there that you should all be aware of is the UAF strategic plan. It is still in draft stage, as I understand it, and open for comment. And one thing that I want you to do is get a copy of it and have a look at it. As a staff person and as a staff governance leader, I was pretty surprised not to see the word staff in it once. So when you're looking at it, look at it from a staff person's perspective, and you know, a strategic plan is a direction for the ship, so to speak. And when you're looking at it, tell me whether or not you think it reflects the role that staff should play, or you know, reflects our presence as a part of this team.
And that goes along with the five themes?
Yes, the five themes are the president's statewide initiative, and then the UAF strategic plan, of course, directly relates to us. So I would encourage you all to go out, have a look at the UAF strategic plan, and make comments. He said it is still open for comment, and he welcomes comment. And I would encourage you to do that. I'll certainly have a conversation with him about it in more detail at our next meeting. That was one item that was on my list that I should have mentioned. And I'm looking at the list again really quickly. I have encouraged him at convocation to point out that staff council meetings are public meetings, and that you're welcome to call in and welcome to come and listen in and make comments during public comments. So when in your communications to your units, ask, you know, be sure and put that information out there as well. We have some possibly big changes coming. That is, of course, in compensation and healthcare and so on. And we want to raise the elevation of awareness. And by telling everyone that they can participate, we hope that encourages them to do so. And the other things will fall on other agenda items, but those are separate. Any questions on those? Okay. And someone else has joined us? Okay, then we'll move on to governance reports. As I understand it, Jennifer Reynolds made a statement to Nicole. Anything you want to? Well, basically, in the last couple of days, Faculty Alliance has met, and she will meet with us hopefully in September and share initiatives that came out of there as well as what's going on in Faculty Senate. And I have the schedule for the Faculty Senate meetings, and I will attend those regularly and report on what we're up to and hear what they're up to at that level. And no word from Mari, who is the ASUAF president. So we'll move on to item 7, unfinished business. Walker.
I wish I had more on the strategic reorganization. I was out of town in July, so we weren't able to meet then, and we weren't able to meet around the first of this month. So I've started drafting some of the different potential directions to take it and bring that to EMR when we actually get a meeting together. So there's nothing substantial. It's still kind of a sketch of the different possibilities for potential types of reorganization.
Okay.
Are there any questions about it?
Okay. Thank you. So 7B, the healthcare update. What I can tell you is that all of the healthcare committees met over the summer. The Joint Healthcare Committee and the Staff Healthcare Committee continued to meet through the summer. In addition to that, President Gamble did approve and appoint a healthcare task force. Just to be clear, the healthcare task force is a one-time temporary committee, and they were tasked with reviewing, coming up with out-of-the-box ideas and suggestions for the Joint Healthcare Committee to review, and President Gamble to review as well. They have been meeting weekly for the summer, and tomorrow actually there's a face-to-face day-long meeting of the whole group. I think I've told you, wasn't able to tell you that at our last meeting, but there are two representatives from Anchorage, two representatives from UA Southeast, and two representatives from statewide, and then UA Fairbanks actually has three representatives. We don't have a website. We don't have the information up because at this point, really, we're just collecting resources and reviewing them. Our goal after tomorrow is to have some draft recommendations to begin discussing with JHCC and the president. Will they be the final recommendations? I don't believe so. I think we're going to continue on meeting probably for another month, and then make more final recommendations after that. But tomorrow is really, you know, we've been collecting a lot of information. Our information strings that we've been looking at are large private employers in the state, the state's health plans, industry trends, what's going on at our peer institutions, other universities, and I'm trying to think off the top of my head, I think those are the major strands that we've been looking at. We've also had demographic information. We also got the information that says how many people opted out after the open enrollment and said how many people switched to HDHP and so on. So that information was shared with us. And I think that, I mean, just a massive amount of information that we've been looking at. And so tomorrow is like when it all comes together and we start taking that moving blob and form it into some direction. I have to say I'm really, really pleased with the energy brought into this. Kathy Cahill has done some great research for us, as, I mean, everyone has. It's just been a very active and involved group, and I think some good things are going to come out of it. It might surprise you. I mean, so, for example, one of the things that we're looking at is a campus clinic. And it's really looking, I mean, the information that we've collected on how that's worked in the past has there's been some good return from that. But that's one recommendation that we're looking at. Beyond that, I think that's roughly the gist of it. Do you have any questions?
Joella, this is Jennifer. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Regarding, I just have something out of there. I don't know if those meetings are open to the public or anything, but as a rural site employee, a campus clinic wouldn't help us very much, but have you at all, maybe in the future or now in the past, talked about if there's a rural or an on-campus clinic, what type of services would be a rural campus employee would be eligible for? I know that helps the majority of the employees, but I was just curious if, you know, there'd be like a voucher or something that a rural site employee would be able to use.
Actually, Jennifer, the way that we're looking at it, it would help all employees because it should reduce your premium.
Okay, I understand.
Right. There. It won't necessarily be cheaper for us here.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be more convenient. And there is, you know, there are lots of variations. What we found is there's a lot of variation to the clinics that are available. Some of them are for preventative only. They only offer preventative services. Others offer the whole range, but at a reduced rate, and so on. I mean, so there's lots of variations. We haven't, you know, gone very, you know, deeply into all of those. Just right now, we're just looking at the surface. But the goal is for it to reduce premiums.
Great. That sounds good. Thank you.
You bet.
Joelle, do you have? Oh, sorry. I didn't raise my hand.
Okay.
Do you have any of the preliminary numbers for people who opted out or went down to a lower plan?
My impression is that it exceeded their expectations.
So it probably met our expectations because
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
you know, we've talked about this a lot, and
yeah,
we all said, especially you and I with the chancellor, that this was going to be a momentous change.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see what those are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's my understanding that those numbers are going to go to JHCC at their next meeting and up for discussion. But, you know, I'm not on JHCC, and I'm not sure if they're for general distribution yet or not. I hope you guys understand that if anything that comes to me, if they ask me to hold on for it a little bit, of course I will. But if they say, oh, no, it's white out there, I will get it out to you. And don't hesitate to jump up and down at me if I haven't. Any other questions?
My question was pretty much the same as Pip's, but I'd be interested in those percentages of change from one plan to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So if people, you know, 90% of the people ran away from the plan they were on to get on the cheaper one, then, yeah.
Right. Well, and I'll tell you, I mean, have the plans for consideration for FY14 been Mary Sue distributed those. So the statewide has already brought some items for FY14 to the staff health care committee and the joint health care committee things like opting out, taking away the option to opt out, and also doing away with the premium plan.
Right.
And the reasons are so many people are opting out, and there's so few people left in the high the 750.
The 500 plan. No,
the 500 plan.
The 750 plan they'll keep, but they're discussing doing away with the 500 plan.
Right, because so few people are left in it. So.
But as I am on the staff health care committee, and two of our members are on the joint health care committee, so our next meeting, I believe, is like the 27th, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, if they provide those numbers, they will go on my blog and I will send it out.
Yeah, they will by then. I guarantee it. Anything else? Any other questions?
Joella, is it still on the table, or is there still a discussion about centers of excellence and going out into like the lower 48 to get hip surgeries and stuff like that?
Medical tourism.
Is that back on the table, or is it off the table?
Well, the way, let's see how to put this. I think it's being considered, but the challenges are, for example, with Blue Cross, we've negotiated a preferred provider contract, you know, as a part of that plan. And so by shipping people out, you know, the people in the state that negotiated a preferred provider relationship with Blue Cross and therefore UA employees, they're in trouble. I mean, obviously they're unhappy because we negotiated this with you. And now you're sending your people outside. I will tell you, I don't know if any of you saw the letter from the Commissioner of Administration, and their discussions with in-state providers, saying, you know, 3 and 4 times the outside rate is unreasonable. So that discussion is happening, both with state employees, and therefore, I think that's the turning point.
That's what I was going to mention. I think it's on the table for the state to be looking at medical tourism.
Right. That's why I think it is. Yeah. But has it been listed as one of the FY14 recommendations, our suggestions for consideration? No.
We've had the Lockton. Dave Hinckley with Lockton attends our staff healthcare meetings on a regular basis, and he did present that information. And at this point, all things are on the table as far as we're concerned. We're getting information together. We're getting a lot of feedback from staff, especially on the blog site, and apparently the president does have the link to the blog site. So all that information is being provided to the Joint Health Care Committee as well as the Staff Health Care Committee, and we're talking about it.
Okay, so Gary?
Just real quickly, I mean, I really appreciate having that information on the blog, by the way. I had asked for those numbers that you mentioned, and they said they weren't available. I think they have to go to joint healthcare or something before they think they're public. One interesting thing somebody said back to me on the opt-out when I had sent that information on is they said, well, if you do that, then certainly in the case of federal employees on the military side in particular, is that we will then become 80% and they will become 20%, so we won't be saving anything. We'll actually be increasing our costs. So what those numbers are, I don't know if anybody's looking at that, but
I sure hope they're sharing that information with Staline.
Well, you know, no matter what you do, we're screwed. So professional opinion.
So let me take this opportunity. One of the things that came out of Alliance was the need, not only the need to communicate out to you, to our constituents, but to get it back. We really need to show the President and the Board of Regents that this is an engaged staff. And so the blog, for example, Mary Sue's putting that out there. Well, let's show them by making comments on it, by demonstrating an interactive conversation that staff are paying attention and do have, feelings about, I mean, we all do, of course, but by showing that, if we can direct them to this and say, look at how active this blog is, and it's also, as an FYI, Staff Alliance is talking about a blog as well. It's for the statewide issues and at the statewide level, and it may turn into a partnership with Mary Sue's, but we haven't fully developed that idea yet. We're looking at it, though. So in any case, the more that you can show that your constituents are giving you feedback, are commenting, sending you, the better and the stronger our voices with the Board of Regents.
Now, with that said, as far as the blog, is there a possibility of, instead of being a Unit 7 blog with Mary Sue, can we make that more of a general town council blog?
Absolutely.
And where that is concerned, it's not just a Unit 7 blog. I send it out to all the deans, directors, and PTAs, and I request that they send it out to their staff because I don't have, you know, the email address for every single person. So as people get it, I don't look at myself personally. I don't look at myself as just representing Unit 7. So I send that out to everybody, and as everyone gets it, I would encourage anyone to forward it on to your staff. If you have a distribution list for your unit, you know, send it out. I'm all about communication with the staff.
So Mary Sue and John, you and I should probably sit down and have a conversation about this in the next couple of weeks, because I think there's some merit to a more formal process for getting the word out farther and wider. It's really kind of unfair that Mary Sue is our spokesperson. So we should talk about that. Any questions on the healthcare update then?
I have a question. This is Jed Lowell online.
Okay.
This is for Joella or for Mary Sue. Has there been any discussion about making the high deductible health plan HSA available, health savings account available?
That is one thing that we are considering within the staff healthcare committee. We're talking about maintaining the current plan that we have, but also creating one that is HSA compatible, that where we can do that. And so that is one of the plan designs that we're talking about, and that's also one of the designs that are also listed on the blog site as well.
Right.
And I have a second question. I'm looking right now at the staff council webpage, and I can't find this blog.
No, it's in an email that I sent out, and I'll send it out to you again, Jeb. But look, when you look at the, I think I put out the title of the, if when I sent it out the last time, I think the title of it was SACC Meeting August Must Read. But I'll send it out to you again for your review.
Okay. It might be nice to have a link on the somewhere too.
That's a part of the conversation we're going to have that we will have after this.
The question on the healthcare savings plan thing. I understand that the whole purpose it hasn't actually gone anywhere because there's may have been a deadline failure from statewide to actually hire somebody into a position to do that.
I'm not aware of a deadline. Yeah, I mean, I know that they, for example, they combined Mike Humphrey and Erica Van Flynn's positions. She now does both retirement and benefits.
It was my understanding the only thing holding back an HSA-eligible high-deductible health plan was our pharmacy benefit.
Oh.
That had to be changed around a little bit, I do believe, and that was the only thing that would...
Okay. Any other questions then online? All right, then we'll move on to the employee tuition benefit update. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot to tell you about on this. It is still active. The one online, the tuition waiver benefit online, is still the current one. President Gamble has not signed a new version, so don't. You know, there was some confusion with that because there was a draft that went out at one point that had a start date of July 1, and that has not happened. We are still under the old tuition benefit policy. So in any case, where it stands now, President Gamble, when we met in July, had received a memo of listing concerns about the benefit changes. When he looked at those, he found there were some reasonableness there apparently, and so we had a conversation about the changes. We've kind of come to a tentative agreement, but I've yet to actually see their next draft. So in any case, until we, you know, there's not been a draft for Staff Alliance to review and comment on or approve or anything like that. So as it stands now, we're under the old tuition benefit, and I don't have a timeline for you on the changes because I'm not getting any responses from those that would give me a draft. It was not made available to us last week at the Alliance retreat. Unless there's any questions, Staff Appreciation Day update. Good news on that front. The Chancellor has taken over the leadership of that event. Of course, he welcomes and expects staff council to continue to provide volunteers. In fact, actually what I've suggested is a co-chair. Someone in the Chancellor's office or their HR will be the lead from the administrative side, and then someone from council will provide the staff council's input. So what we'll look for here in the next, not this meeting, but in the next couple of meetings, is for someone willing to step up and co-chair the Staff Appreciation Day event. So essentially what this does is take the pressure off of our shoulders. We don't have to deal with the funding side of things and so on. We will just provide input and muscle. And I think this is a great, I think it's only appropriate that the Chancellor's office be the lead on coordinating this event, recognizing staff. I see a couple of furrowed brows. I will tell you at this point, I really don't have any concerns about this change. I think it'll be easier for us. But certainly it hasn't happened yet, so maybe I might learn something. Any questions on that? We will put out a call for a co-chair, and then, of course, that co-chair will be responsible for getting volunteers from staff to help with the event. And at this point, we're at a break. I have 5 minutes down. We'll come back in 5 minutes. For those online, we'll be back at I can't see the clock. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Thank you. So I need to call us back in here. We've gone over our 5 minutes.
Joella, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you? Can I request that the people speaking in the room speak into the microphone? It was hard the first half of the meeting to hear a little bit.
No, okay, I will do that. Listen, guys, move those microphones closer to you and help us help online hear what the heck we're up to. And truly, you guys, you don't want to see what I'm seeing, so online.
I bet.
Okay, so we are back on task, right? We are on item 8. We're item 8, new business. A is the compensation increase update. So this one is interesting, and I really would appreciate your feedback on this. Last June, Staff Alliance, President Gamble requested a number. What number would you like for the compensation increase? So last June, Alliance met, and after discussion and review of documents and so on, we came up with 5.5%. So Staff Alliance passed a motion requesting 5.5% busy compensation increase for FY14. Delivered that motion to the president and met with him in July, early July, and his response, essentially, he more or less said that you're not going to get that. You know, that the Board of Regents, while they support an increase for staff, he basically alluded to a 2.9% because that's the number that UAFT is getting in their contract, that 2.5, they're getting a 2.5 plus a 0.4 market adjustment, so for a total of a 2.9% increase. He didn't say no, and he didn't say don't bother taking it to the Board of Regents and so on. I mean, certainly we can continue. We can take this 5.5% number to the Board of Regents. The challenge with that is, I think part of that 5.5% is based on numbers. It's based on the cost of living. It's based on the impact of the healthcare premium increases on our paycheck. It's based on numbers. Part of it's based on how do you show that you value your employees. So, for example, we haven't had, you know, non-represented staff haven't had a market adjustment or market survey in how long. We no longer reward longevity. We have no formal process for rewarding. I mean, we have a formal but unfair process for rewarding excellence. So part of, while President Gamble is a numbers man, part of that 5.5% is backed by numbers, but part of it's backed by the request that staff have to the administration, and that is recognize our value, recognize our role. And so in any case, my question to all of you is, formally, Staff Alliance has requested 5.5%. Last week at the retreat, we discussed, you know, that number more states our unhappiness and our frustration with what's happening to our paycheck. But given the fact that they've only asked for a 2% tuition increase, and that the enrollments are or have been flat. And that the governor's approach to all budget requests are hold the line, that is, don't expect, you know, don't be adding a great deal to your budget request. You know, the odds are slim that we could get that 5.5%. Now, we can try the rally cry. We can push hard. We can, you know, we can go out. We can talk to our local legislators. We can talk to our constituents. We can say, hey, and we can put together the full-blown package that demonstrates where we're coming from and justify the other things that you can't quantify. And go forward with the 5.5 alliance. I'm trying to remember the exact language. Yeah. I think alliance officially voted no lower than a 3.5% request. So I guess I want your feedback on that. You know, I hope you understand the environment that we're in. That is both the budget environment, the fiscal environment, but as employees, the impacts on our paycheck. And give me your thoughts, and I would open the floor, I guess, then to feedback. Certainly. Walker.
I could see reducing the amount that we request for compensation if we introduce a salary differential for Fairbanks and come back to revisiting that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I was reading recently. I think someone like Brad may have sent something around that was showing that the cost of living expenses compared to Anchorage was much higher than what we had seen in the past, and since no official survey from the state has been done that we can point at, then, I mean, it puts us in a tough position. The other thing that I realize, I'm under the impression, at least, that Chancellor Rogers was one of the people who went and had removed the differential that had existed several years ago. So it may be something that he would be willing to look at again and go, oh, wait, we do pay more. No, you don't think he would? All right. Anyway, that's my two cents.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we've pointed out is that UA Fairbanks, university employees in Fairbanks don't get a geographic differential, but state employees in Fairbanks do receive a differential. Chancellor Rogers, if you look at the announcements of the chancellors, when President Gamble announced the 2% tuition increase, the chancellors then responded and put out their own kind of press release, their own statements. Chancellor Rogers was the only chancellor that mentioned the impact on budgets that this was going to have and the challenges. He was the only chancellor that brought that up. And if you go back and look at his response, he basically said, we're going to have to figure out where in the budget we can make this up. When in our pre-staff, our face-to-face meeting, one-on-one with the chancellor, he basically said, any significant increases over 2% are going to result in force reduction. That translates into staff losing their jobs. So, go ahead. Yes.
Here's just an observation that I've seen in my department with my position. Also, in regards to a position that's in another department that's the same job, and actually there's two where there's another person leaving, we put announcements out for jobs, one specific job. We did not have a good applicant pool, and both of our candidates turned us down. The other department has not found somebody else for this job because it's not paying well enough. And now the third department is losing probably their top producer. So either way, the university is going to be affected by this one way or the other because nobody's taking the jobs. And more importantly, the skilled labor that we do have here is starting to leave. And the university is going to have to accept that at some point that, I mean, we did not get qualified applicants for this job position, and this is just the one that I know about. So I'm curious, from the HR perspective, what are we seeing across the board about who's applying into the university, and are they qualified for the job? Because the compensation isn't getting the skilled labor that we need.
I would counter that with, I'm currently recruiting for a position in my unit, and we had 14 applicants. And we had probably half of those were qualified. Have we started the negotiations yet for the pay? No, we haven't done that. So it may be that the top candidates come in and say, look, we want more money if we consider this. But, you know,
it's going to depend on the type of position, to a certain degree, and the technicality and everything else that's involved. And
right.
So, anyway, that's just my thought.
I just want to outline one thing really quick, Walker, before I go to you or Gary as well. I've been trying to talk to the administration about a big picture approach to these issues. Every year, we have to haggle, justify our request for a compensation increase. And some years, we've lost benefits. We've lost coverage, or our premiums have gone up, or we lost longevity, or we lost, and so on. I mean, every year, it's a nibble here, and a gain there, and a chunk here, and so on. And what I'm trying to get across is you're losing employees, and they may look at the bottom line, but they're looking at this total over here, how much money they've saved here, but they aren't looking over here and how much more they're spending in recruitment, or how much brain drain is going on here at the university. So my efforts or my intent this year is to try to get across that you have to look at all the numbers. You have to look at the sum, at the big picture, and what are you doing? When you talk about force reduction, that job doesn't go away. It goes to someone else. And one of the things that we talked about at the Alliance level was educating staff on their rights to, for example, a 10% out-of-class adjustment when you are given someone else's work. And so on, and the rights and the process that you have and can go through to get your position description reviewed. For example, if you're added something that is not in your position description, it's not there, but you're doing it, and you're expected to do it, and you're not being paid as a result because you're being paid according to that position description. Well, the reality is you can take it outside the university. You can file a grievance within the university, but you can take it to the Department of Labor as well. I mean, I think one of the things at the Alliance level that we've come to is we have to educate staff as to what their rights are, not just within the university, but outside the university, because we're not getting through to the administration that you can't just keep cutting forces and expecting us to take on a load. That doesn't work. The system's going to break, and the quality of our work is going to go down because we're overburdened and we're stressed. So, you know, at the Alliance meeting and with President Gamble, I've been encouraging, let's look at the big picture. But parallel to that, we have to be communicating to our constituents. There are other options, and this is how. We have some people who really know how to work the system. I've seen numbers on who in the system got raises and in grade adjustments, and guess who the best group is? Statewide. So let's share our knowledge on how to work within the system, but also outside the system if necessary, at the same time while we're sorting things out with the administration. Walker, go ahead.
Just
Just a real quick thing. I've heard Chancellor Rogers say over the past 3 years that we don't have a complete compensation package. Why don't we challenge him to introduce one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all I...
Well, I would love to sit down with you and talk about how to do that exactly. I think you're right, but at the same time, you know, the chancellor, and this is the other side of the coin. The chancellors, they have their burdens. You know, they have increasing fixed costs that are nibbling away, and the soft spot is in this room with our salaries and with our positions. We're the easy place to make up fixed costs that aren't being covered adequately out of the legislature. So they have their own set of burdens, but the way that we're doing, we're taking, in my mind, we're taking gradual steps, sometimes big ones, sometimes little ones, right towards the cliff. And the cliff is the quality of the education that we provide. It's the quality of our services to the students. And if we keep going down this path, that we're going off, and they're... We may as well have been in the desert years back there where they were cutting everything right and left because the impact was a little bit more gradual. Gary, did you have something?
Just two things. One is stepping back to the strategic perspective for a second. The last meeting, and Brian thought that was a good idea, is if we're holding our tuition down at 2%, then they may be able to get the legislature to fully fund that, which would essentially mean double of what we're getting now. And I don't know if that came up in your discussion, if that's still on its mind.
By saying to the legislature, look.
Basically saying to the legislature, you know, you've asked us to fund 50% of our increases, but
yes.
we're gonna try and keep our costs down. Can you help encourage us to do so?
Mm-hmm. But by the time we get to that point, we've half rolled the dice.
Okay.
I mean, we're because once it gets there, and I'm not convinced that number is even going to get that far.
Okay.
You know, because the next step in the process is, you know, they put the increase in the budget, they work all the numbers, and then they present it to the Board of Regents in September, and then at their November meeting, the Board of Regents approves the budget, and then it goes to the Governor's office. So at the September meeting, we have to make our statements and make our impact, and we have to be able to back it up again in November.
Okay. It was just a suggestion. I'm just making sure that at least carries forward a little bit. The other thing is if we're going to back off the 5.5%, then how about a commitment to do investigate GeoDiff or to do market survey, which they said was too expensive.
Right.
A number of different things to get some, you know, firm commitments to move forward so that we can kind of get these things back in alignment.
Right, I'm sorry. That is, in fact, actually what Alliance directed me to do when I sit down and have that conversation is, you know, okay, we understand you're here, but what other things can you do for us that maybe don't cost you money? For example, making the grievance process more transparent and fair to staff. That doesn't cost money. But you're right. So that was, here, we're here with this, and we're giving you this number, but there's some other things we're attaching to it.
Yeah, the GeoDiff, I think, would make a heck of a difference.
Except it costs money, but certainly it's worth review. I agree. It is on the table for discussion. But what we're looking at also is what doesn't cost money. Any other comments or questions on the compensation increase?
Sure.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to put this out there first. I'm speaking solely for myself and not for my constituents, as I have not spoken with anyone regarding this. You know, I have a challenging time seeing it from the president's perspective when there are administrative people that are being hired, signing bonuses given, those kinds of things. And then you have those of us that are on the front line, it seems like at war, but you're not willing to even show any appreciation. And for me personally, I'm not willing to back down from the 5.5%. If we don't get it, we don't get it. But that's just something that I am about, because even when you try to go into UAK jobs and you update your job description, you know, that's fine and dandy. You can update it, but then your supervisor has to approve it. And even if those are jobs that you are doing, if your supervisor is pressured by their supervisor because it affects the budget, then that doesn't get approved. So although those jobs are being done and those tasks are being done, it's still not being recognized. And I don't know that people are necessarily going to go outside the UA system to file a complaint or whatever, because people need their jobs to pay their bills and take care of their families. And so I have to honestly say that where this particular topic is concerned, I'm a little bit more than frustrated by it.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer?
A comment I have is, you guys look at what the maximum amount of increase has ever been in the history? Because I've been here about 29 years, and I don't ever recall getting a 5% increase. I think it's high, very high, and we know we're not going to get it. So my other comment is, if you do that, you get the staff out there, and they've already heard about it, there's a placeholder for 5.5%, and we don't get it, it's going to be bad for the administration. So, well, they only gave us 2. I don't know. I think we need to look at that.
I have a comment for you, Jennifer. Going back to the days that I first started working here as a staff member back in the 2001 time frame, we didn't have a lump 5%, but we'd get our annual step, and at the lower end of the board, it was 3% per grade. And we'd also get cost of living, which came out to around 2% a year. So if we're talking about a 5% increase over the time of the year, then we had some times that we got something around that area. So that's my only comment for you.
Yeah, I just think it needs to be looked at, because I don't ever remember getting
5%. No, and the change that's happened is that there's no longer a separation between COLA and that, so that was where we were.
Well, if anything, I think staff would be more receptive to getting that back, because you are compressing the salary schedule.
There is a chart online somewhere on UAHR's site of previous pay increases going back, I think, 20 years. You can go find that somewhere, and it divides it by staff and labor and I think faculty union. I'm not entirely sure, but it's there. I just don't know exactly.
Yeah,
where.
I know it's there. I just wondered if you guys looked at it.
Yes, they did. We did as a part of this. John?
You just mentioned many times as far as staff being the soft spot for reductions, and we have been. We always have been. And it seems like we always seem to either retreat or cave and go with something lower, and that's just the status quo. That's what we will do until we do something different.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And are you ready to inspire us to do otherwise?
Are staff ready to do something different? The question.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, where's the tipping point? And that's one of the things that we're hoping to get to with the survey. With the statewide survey, where's the tipping point? At what point? I mean, you know, I've asked for numbers. How many people have resigned in the last year? How many people? Because if we're losing people, that number should go up, and that should be a sign that we're close to the tipping point. If not, we've already reached it. If we have positions and more recruitments that are failed recruitments because we don't have an adequate pool and so on. And, for example, they go into every recruitment with a starting number. How's the gap between where the recruitment was intended and what was actually received when they start the job? You see what I mean? How much negotiation is going on there? My concern, and this is I've said to the president, there's a tipping point. You're no longer the employer of choice, and you're going to be out there struggling against every other employer to get quality people, and you're going to lose the good ones.
Our office has not had an executive officer for over a year. Both of our fiscal officers are leaving. There's a huge, huge void there that could have been avoided, and it wasn't because they don't care. It's staff.
Which puts a
pretty big burden on the couple, 3-4 people that are left in the office.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really prime example, if you ask me.
Well, and Richard, one more second. Really, you guys have to start these conversations with your coworkers. You have to tell them what's going on. You have to get their feedback. You have to talk with them and encourage them to give feedback to the blogs or give feedback to us and so on. If we don't raise the din, if we don't raise the level of audible frustration, they're going to continue to do what they do with us. They're, you know, the other thing that to tell you is, you know, ASEA filed several unfair labor practices against the university. Well, they've withdrawn them. And these were ULPs that were being reviewed by the labor agency, and they've been withdrawn. So that tells me, you know, ASEA is walking away. So then what, you know, how do we work with this? How do we change the path that this university is on? I think, Richard, do you have...
Well, the only comment I had was you had just mentioned where's the tipping point. And I believe that point is past maybe 10 or 15 years ago. This place is no longer the preferred place to find a job in Fairbanks. This is almost the place of last resort. Well, their benefits are all right. Over there, it's all about that. And, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. It's worse. And most people, there's a lot of people who are exactly the same situation where they don't want to rock the boat because they have to have the paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
They have to support their family. I believe that the way they... And it will, you know, and if we do ask for 1.5 million or whatever, your opportunity to negotiate a better salary has to be higher.
Right.
That was your one chance. And now you get whatever.
Mm-hmm. John?
So, looking at my office, we've had multiple failed searches for a risk manager for quite some time, to the point where we actually had to downgrade the position to get somebody that we could actually hire at a lower rate. So a statistic that I'd like to see is how many jobs are actually being downgraded to the point where you can hire somebody that's not necessarily qualified for the job, or how many positions are not fillable because people won't take it. We had multiple excellent people for a risk manager when it came to pay, they refused. They couldn't do it. They wouldn't do it.
Right.
So in just like that, how many positions in the university are not filled because we can't hire somebody?
Well, and this goes to the big picture that I'm trying to paint for the administration. You know, what is this costing us? You know, what are the failed searches? What are the empty positions costing us? And if you don't see that, if you don't recognize the value of that, imagine if all of our departments were at full staff, and we were adequately rewarded to the point where we were happy in our positions, motivated, loyal, and so on. Imagine the change there would be in the energy of this institution. But that's the thing I can't get them to understand. Those are the things I mean, there's only so much that we can do. There's only certainly so much that I can do. But if each and every one of you commits to going out and talking to multiple people every week and getting the information directly, one-on-one, face-to-face to them, not another email, but getting the information directly to them and helping them to see the issues, see the challenges, not just on our side, but on the administration side. You know, we can change this, but it isn't going to happen overnight. Go ahead.
Do you get the sense that this is really system-wide, or is it UAS?
No, it's system-wide.
Okay.
I think when you look at a chancellor's priorities, you know, we have the students and making life easy for the students and supporting them and so on, and then you have the academics and what programs, what new initiatives do we have and so on and so on. And when you start talking about staff and those things that touch staff, you know, we're on the next page on that list of priorities. And I think the chancellors have us in different tiers of those priorities. I think, you know, UA Southeast might value staff. I'm certain they do. So I think there's a difference that some value it more than others. UAF is a different animal, and it has a different set of challenges. And Chancellor Rogers has been receptive to things like Staff Appreciation Day and so on, but he's also a man of the numbers and a man with a mission, and he'll do what he needs to get that mission done.
Just real quickly, what you're saying actually reinforces the need maybe to go look at the strategic direction and start putting in some comments that may address this aspect of
the strategic directions
discussion.
At the statewide level or the UAS strategic
Well, at
plan?
The statewide level as well as the strategic plan, if you will, at UAS.
One of the five themes of the Strategic Directions Initiative is accountability. That's a big word, and you can fit a lot of things under it. You can justify a lot of things by saying we're improving accountability. That theme is one I definitely want to keep an eye on, and what actions they plan on tucking in under that umbrella. You can use accountability in a good way. You can say to the legislature, we're holding ourselves accountable. We are raising the number of students we graduate, yada, yada. Or you can say, we are fiscally accountable. The governor says hold the line. That means no more increases. That means fewer staff because, our salaries are, total salaries are too high or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of things you can stick under accountability.
Which also means fewer students because we can't support it.
That's the other thing. That, again, goes to the interconnected. This is all related. It's all a big picture. I said this unequivocally to the president, if you create an environment where your staff are not happy, they're not loyal, and they're not happy, then they're not motivated. And they're not going to do their job as well. It's just human nature. They're not going to do their job. Now, we have some don't get me wrong. We have outstanding staff. And every time that I've run into people that work with students, they love what they do, and they love working with the students. And I think that's, quite frankly, what keeps people here more than anything else. It's certainly no longer the benefits. It's about their love for their students and what they do. But at some point, your life changes, whether you get a family and you can't afford it and you have to go do something else, or at some point there are life changes, and love of what you do is only going to keep you going so long in an environment where you're not appreciated and given the resources to do it well. So we do need to get moving on. You guys need to remind me. I get passionate about what's going on, and I want you to understand, because I can't do it by myself, and you have to turn around and share it with your constituents. You have to light the fires around in your colleagues and coworkers, and otherwise all of this is for naught. We're just going to keep pushing the boulder up the mountain and not getting anywhere. The staff resources website is, I wanted to ask staff affairs to put it on their agenda for the year to review the UAFHR staff resources website. As some of you might remember, that was a compromise between a paper staff handbook and making resources available to staff. And I think it's time for that website to be reviewed by staff. Does it continue to meet our needs to getting information to our constituents or not?
Who maintains that website?
UAFHR. And Brad, it's on my list of things to talk with Brad about, but we've brought it up to the Chancellor, and he said, oh, that's probably due for a review. So what you could do is email Brad and ask if there is one particular person in charge of that, and then ask to work with that individual.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. 8C is the 2013 meeting schedule. It's attached. The reason that we were setting our dates is so that we can get started on approving a calendar for 2013.
The only thing I have where those are concerned, is this a place for comment?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. On Tuesdays for some departments may be challenging because you have, for those that do ProCard reconciliation, they have to be done by Tuesday at noon.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking Tuesday from 8 to 11 for a staff council meeting, although I truly value these meetings, would hinder some attendance to the meetings.
I think that's something that we've found every time we've tried to set schedules, is that we're always going to find someone. In fact, Chancellor Rogers indicated that he may miss Wednesdays frequently because that's President's Cabinet Day.
Okay.
According to Helen Connor, all your stuff should be there Monday afternoon. I know it's hard to do it on a Monday, too, because they're pretty jammed full. But in theory, you should be able to do it Monday afternoon.
Right, so that's kind of why we've sprinkled it a little bit. You'll see there's some Tuesdays and there's some Wednesdays, and there's even a Thursday in there. So we've tried to sprinkle it because we're not going to be able to make everybody happy.
Is there any way of saying the January 22nd to the Thursday of the program?
I'm sorry, you need to speak into the microphone.
Is there any way we can change the January 22nd meeting to a Wednesday or a Thursday of that week?
No. There was a Board of Regents. She set that date because of a Board of Regents meeting the next 2 days, but it's a retreat. It's not open to the public and not open to governance, so I think we can move it a day if need be.
It would be.
Also for the March meeting dates to be determined, we've set that. What do you have for that? March 27th?
What day of the week is that?
It's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday. Unless there are significant issues.
I had one question about this.
Mm-hmm.
We're meeting 2:39. That's our face-to-face. Do we already know what day Staff Appreciation Day is occurring? Is that the Friday following or the Wednesday before?
Staff Appreciation Day is on the 15th.
Wednesday. Okay. Thank you.
I have a question. This is Jed Lowell online.
Yes.
Are we switching to over to mostly audio conferences then?
No, we've always had just two face-to-faces.
You used to have more, right?
I think we've had three, but we
used to have two in the fall and two in the spring. But
apparently Nicole is telling me that funding is not there for that. I think what happened is we've kind of gradually been pushed back to the February meeting being face-to-face for new reps, and then May being the face-to-face for Staff Appreciation Day. And I think we probably have had one in the fall, but I think what we're being told is funding isn't there for that travel.
So maybe just a clarification for Jed. Local people always meet face-to-face, but when they say face-to-face on this, it means bringing people from rural campuses into Fairbanks.
Okay, thank you.
And that, you know, that's something else we have to look at is our membership and how many rural reps we have. But that could be something that I would be willing to have a conversation with the Chancellor regarding a fall face-to-face meeting.
Nicole, do you happen to have the dates of the rest of the meetings for this year handy?
Yeah.
Could you just read them off, maybe? I want to put them in my calendar, and then everybody can see them. Could you add the staff council calendar to yours to
the
just
Google
copy
calendar.
Them over?
Okay.
Walker?
I'd like to move to approve the motion to adopt the calendar proposal.
With the changes.
The
second.
So we have for meeting 235, we have Wednesday, January 23rd. For meeting 237, we have March 27th.
Which is the Wednesday?
Okay. And there were no other changes, correct? Okay.
And I have a set Google Calendar that has just the meetings on it, and I can email the link out to people. Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve this. Do we have a second?
Second.
Any opposed then to the calendar before you with the changes to meeting 235 and 237? Hearing none, then we have a calendar for 2013, and we'll next at the September meeting we'll put together the ad hoc calendar committee. Okay, the next item is committee staffing and assignments. Woohoo! So we have, as you know, several committees: internal committees, staff affairs, rural affairs, EMR. And advocacy, we also have a communications committee. as an ad hoc further down. So items 10, 11, 12, and 13 are the committees. And what we're looking at is reviewing the membership to those committees. EMR is in need of members?
Yes, we are.
Okay. And as a reminder for the representatives, one, we will, of course, make every effort to have these meetings via audio, but also as a rep to staff council, you're required to participate in one committee. So I'm looking at, as I understand it now, any of the other committees, staff, the internal committee, staff, rural, advocacy, do you have any other membership concerns?
You can add Mary Alice Short to ours, to advocacy.
Okay.
And anybody else that's interested?
Mary Alice, are you still in staff affairs as well? Or?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll move to the external statewide committees. Staff Alliance's Staff Healthcare Committee. We have two seats on that committee appointed by the officers here as our representatives to that committee because it is a Staff Alliance committee. Some of our Staff Alliance reps serve on it as well, and others appoint someone to serve. And as officers, Pips and I last year chose to appoint someone else to serve. And Claudia, I think, do you want to serve on Staff Healthcare Committee? No. So our membership for now on the Staff Healthcare Committee is Kat Williams, Carolyn Simmons, Maria Russell is listed as an alt, and Mary Sue Date is listed as an alt. Now, is anyone aware of any changes to that membership? Is Carolyn? I thought I heard that one of them was retiring or resigning.
Well, Kat, she still comes, but I thought she was saying that she didn't know how much longer she would be able to come because her duties have changed.
So Kat, I think, was online.
Yes, or was.
Maria hasn't attended any that I can think of but lately.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's just because of summer.
Okay. Okay, well, Mary Sue, will you take the lead for me on confirming the membership? Is there anyone else present today or online that wishes to serve on the healthcare committee? I'd like your names in case we have a loss of any of the other reps.
We have fallback if you need somebody.
So Gary, for staff healthcare. Gary and Deb.
What I would like to request is if one of the regulars do step down, I would like to become a regular and not an alt.
Okay. Okay, so Mary Sue, will you work with me to confirm membership, and then we'll go from there, and I'll inform the group next in September of any changes in membership. The Staff Alliance's Compensation Committee, I have essentially disbanded that group as chair of Alliance, and it's my intent to, it was Alliance's intent to reappoint members, two from each MAU, so that would be eight members. And we are also willing to entertain volunteers considering chairing the Staff Compensation Committee. We have a very specific task for the committee, but at this point it was our thought that we'd like to seek someone that is not on Alliance to serve as chair. So I'm putting the word out to you, if there's someone you know that would be interested in serving, or if any of you are interested in serving, please let me know in the next 2 weeks. And then also, if you're interested in serving on the Compensation Committee, please send me an email.
I am interested in serving on that committee.
Okay, please send me an email. And in 2 weeks, I'll take those names and we'll go forward from there, and I'll certainly let you know again to the membership of that committee at the next meeting. Yes, Walker?
Can we have someone follow up on work-life balance, as Chris Racino was the last chair of that, and I thought it had disbanded, but it never was officially disbanded, so
okay.
That'd be it. And
Nicole has something to say.
I checked with her last semester. At that time, she said that she was officially planning on getting it back together, but she wasn't sure when that would happen. So I left it on as inactive, but I'm not sure where that. I haven't contacted her since.
Okay, I have a list of questions I'm putting together for Brad, so I'll add that to it.
Okay, thank you.
See if he absorbed those duties with her departure. Okay, so next to external committees. the Master Planning Committee, we have Gary, and I'm assuming he's continuing.
Yep.
Okay. Is there anyone interested in that position? Otherwise? Okay. Parking Advisory Committee, we have Britton Anderson. Britton's not with us today, correct? Okay, so we need to follow up. Essentially what we're doing here is annually you review the memberships and the appointments, and we give others the opportunity to move into the positions as well. And so what I'm asking all of you present today, if you are currently serving under any of the external UAF committees on listed in item 12, your continued interest, please indicate that. We also have a couple of vacancies now that we should review. So, for example, the Accreditation Steering Committee, item F. Is there anyone interested in serving in that on that committee? It is
Nicole Klupfer is.
Okay.
And I'm still interested in serving on the planning and budget as well.
Okay, so apparently the Accreditation Steering Committee isn't going to meet until spring, and the planning and budget doesn't meet until the spring semester either. Okay, so I put Nicole down for that, and Nicole's continuing interest in D. I'm assuming, well, we need to find out about Ross on CDAC. Claudia will serve at least for the short term on the Meritorious Service Awards Committee. Walker, you're all right with TAB. Okay. For the Intercollegiate Athletic Council, we have Debbie Coxon and Britton Anderson. Are either of those individuals present? Okay, we will follow up on that. Okay, the RISE Board, the Review of Infrastructure and Sustainability, there's an issue with that board. We don't actually, staff council does not have a designated seat on that board. And there is a staff seat on that board, but the process is any individuals interested apply, and they're reviewed, and if they're accepted then, and happen to be a staff person, then staff council is asked if we wish to have them represent us. I have an issue with that. It's a little backwards. Council should have a designated seat on that board if they, but I'm not. I guess what I'm saying is I find that process a little backwards, and I want to put it out there for your thoughts. But keep in mind that we don't have a designated seat on this committee.
I think that because of the impact when it was first created, synthesis, more or less a student-funded and student-operated sort of thing. It's not that staff council staff being affected by what they're doing is that they want to just get a staff perspective rather than specifically for staff council. That's the thought. I don't have a big problem with it either one way or the other.
So I guess my question is to you all, is this an issue we want to push, or do we remove this from our list of opportunities to provide input and let them continue to seek staff applicants the way that they have been? I'm sorry?
I say remove it from the list. We have enough committees.
I'd like to look at the minutes from when this came up and see if there's anything. I don't remember the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And just see the discussion that happened then, because I don't remember all the context that led to that. I guess I'm not picky either way, but if we can wait a month, then I'd like to look at it.
And so you will?
I will.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Jed Lowell online. I would be interested in on applying for that board.
They actually have already had gone through the process, didn't inform us that they were going through the process, have reviewed applicants and accepted Ian Olson apparently as a staff representative on that board. So there currently are no vacancies.
Okay.
So I guess alternately then, or a question, if it's their board, if it's their membership, then what did they say? I guess to look in the minutes for what they last said, but if they're saying now that we don't really want to worry about it being a staff council member and it's they have the authority to ask a staff person, then it doesn't really matter then.
Yeah. I mean, I would entertain a motion either to hold on this on item K for further review or remove it from our agenda and responsibility.
I make a motion that we remove it from our agenda and responsibility.
I changed my mind. Yeah, I second.
Yeah, all right. Any further discussion? Any opposed then to removing item K and the revised board, the RISE board, from our external committee list? Watchers opposed. Any others? All right. Online, can we get a list of people online? I have Nicole. Jennifer Elhart, are you still on?
Yes.
All right. Kat Williams, are you still on? Jed is still on?
Yep.
And Ryan?
Yep.
And has anyone else joined us then?
Debbie Blevins.
All right. Thank you. All right. The other, then, is the People's Endowment Fund Committee.
All volunteer.
That was Deb. Okay. All right. We'll refresh this list then before the September meeting and let you know if there are any what the changes are. Let's see, the committee assignments, that's it for then item E, committee staffing and assignments. I will say staff affairs, I have some plans for staff affairs, essentially the big picture and how do we work to informing staff, but also we can look at it. It's kind of in parallel with the compensation committee, but trust me, I will work as hard as possible to not duplicate efforts. One of them is the grievance process review, which is the next item F. I have long thought the grievance process is unfair for staff, not transparent, and enough ambiguity that there's a fundamental unfairness to it. And it is my wish, my interest in requesting statewide review this policy and reg. And look for ways to make it more fair. I, in fact, actually brought a staff grievance handbook, from about 15 years ago to the Alliance meeting to show that there in the past it was a completely different system. So one of the things that I'd like staff affairs to talk about is the grievance policy and have a look at it and get input on it and how it's broken and where improvements can happen. Alliance is looking at that as well, and we'll look at it. I'm trying to remember if this is a part of the compensation working group or if it's separate. But that is one area that I think, and if you looked at the categories that went around, for example, in diversity, the process for discrimination complaints, et cetera, is clear. Well, that's not the case here either. Yes, Walker.
I'd recommend in tandem with this that you look at the mediation process as well as successor failure.
Okay.
Because it seems like when you have mediation, there's no requirement for either side to actually participate in it.
Okay.
And there's no repercussion for not
participating. Okay, well, Mary Sue and I will meet before her next staff affairs and talk about these items. We will welcome input on them as well, but we'll develop a plan and go from there. We did have item G, the ad hoc committee, the motion to create it. My apologies. I said earlier that we didn't. If there's not any questions, don't hesitate please to raise your hand and jump up and down and stop. I'll pause because I'm in high gear right now trying to get through this agenda. 8G, Ad Hoc 2013 Staff Council Calendar Committee. We have a motion drafted. Please have a look at it. Do we have interest in going forward with this item now or postponing it until the September meeting?
I move we approve this motion.
Any further discussion of attachment 2? The UAF Staff Council moves to establish an ad hoc committee to organize the 2013 Staff Council calendar effective immediately. Any further discussion on that action item? Any opposed to the motion? Hearing none, then we have a mandate. May I get a chair or someone interested in being the coordinator of this ad hoc? Oh, Brad is. All right, Brad, if you will put together a committee and let us know at the September meeting who it is and what your plan is, it will be greatly appreciated.
Okay.
Thank you. We have no guest speakers today. In fact, actually, I requested no guest speakers today because of our workload. I imagine in the September meeting we may have Mae Marsh come back, and then, of course, Brad Loblin come back as the HR director. Committee reports, let's try to keep those brief and the highlights of things that you think we really need to know, and also recruiting if you need to be recruiting. So we'll start with staff affairs.
We haven't met yet. We are meeting next Thursday, August 23rd, and at that meeting I've requested that the committee members come with a list of topics that they would like to see the committee tackle this upcoming year. We're also looking at scheduling our meetings on a regular basis, like every Friday, or every, I think it's like second or third Friday of the month, just so that they're on a regular basis. So we will be meeting next week to kind of talk about different topics. One person that's not on our list that is a member of staff affairs is Jed.
I'll add it. Thank you.
Anything else?
Not at this point, no.
Okay. Brad?
Rural affairs will meet in September. I'm anticipating that we'll probably continue meeting first Tuesdays of the month, but I haven't talked to the rest of the committee, and I'll be doing that shortly so we can schedule our meetings.
All right. Walker?
In EMR, we have elections coming up real soon here, so we'll have to start the process for that, planning it out, and it may be an agenda item on the next staff council agenda. We're also working on the strategic reorganization, and that's what we're doing.
Okay. Debbie?
We also are working to get a regular meeting scheduled. It'll probably be a Thursday or Friday once a month. And trying to take advantage of the weather, already planned one tour for the horticultural research down at the farm. That's this Friday at noon. And I think, got a great response on that. We've got over 20 people that are interested in coming from all over campus. And it occurs to me I'm going to take a few minutes to talk a little bit about staff council and what we're up to there, which would be a good venue. I think these tours are awesome in that they really do bring people from all over campus that wouldn't usually get together for something like this to do something. It doesn't always have to be fun, but I think I think this one will be pretty fun. I'm excited anyway, and I'm really thrilled to have the participation. We're going to send out the announcement again today, and I've got a couple flyers if anybody wants to take a couple back to their area and just encourage people to carpool for that. And then I think we have a lot of other good ideas in the works. Once we get together and meet, we'll talk more about what we can do for the advocacy.
Just a quick question. Are you making some efforts, or should we make some efforts to get you some more members?
Well, I keep asking. I don't know what else to do.
And that's a conversation. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend the administrative committee meeting a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that we wanted to talk about is the role of the communications committee and the role of staff advocacy and the challenges with it. Is advocacy something that could be rolled into a communications committee or rolled into the staff affairs committee? And Mary Sue is shaking her head, but in any case, that's something that we wanted to discuss at the administrative committee first and then bring back to this group if there's anyone that would care to comment at this point. Okay, then we'll look at it in the admin committee and bring back some information or a proposal to this group. Next is 11, external statewide committees, the Staff Alliance Staff Healthcare Committee. Kat's no longer here. Carolyn was not here. I haven't heard Maria, so Mary Sue, you're up.
The staff health care committee has met throughout the summer. We meet the fourth Tuesday of every month, and they are open meetings, so people can attend if they would like to attend. We just ask that you put your phone on mute. We are currently discussing FY14 plan design changes and updates, revisions, those kinds of things. And right now we're in the process of really getting feedback from staff so that we can write recommendations or a motion to present to the Joint Healthcare Committee as they review the task, the healthcare task force ideas and stuff, so that when they get ready to write their motion to the president, it will include staff viewpoints as well. It won't just be from Joint Healthcare, because one of our, a lot of the members on the staff healthcare committee's concern was that although we have two seats on Joint Healthcare for staff, those are the only voices that are being heard. So we really took time in August to try to reach out to staff so that we can get their feedback to be able to present a more informative decision and recommendations to JCC.
So keep, just for clarification, Melody Munson is the UA APT Council's president and serving on Staff Alliance, and she's the chair of the Staff Healthcare Committee and will continue in that role for the coming year. So Staff Alliance didn't get much of a healthcare committee report at the retreat last week. Everyone is reviewing their MAU's membership on that committee. There again is a challenge about the Staff Healthcare Committee. The Joint Healthcare Committee is made up of statewide administration, union representatives, and the two staff seats. It's formally the advisory body to the president on healthcare. And somewhere and somehow along the way, it was, so I mean, I was a part of creating the Staff Healthcare Committee and Staff Alliance, and we wanted it as a group of people separate from JHCC that are staff. It would take all that information, review it, and make recommendations to Staff Alliance so that we could then inform the two members that we have on the Joint Healthcare Committee about our wishes. It's good in theory. It's not necessarily in practice because things happen quickly sometimes and the word doesn't get back out. And then for feedback and brought back, there's not that always that opportunity. But that the role of the healthcare committee is to keep everyone aware of what's going on, especially in the Joint Healthcare Committee. Yeah, Mary Sue?
Well, I just wanted to make a point that there were several of us on the Staff Healthcare Committee because JHCC is a closed meeting.
Yes.
That we did not fully understand that when we come out of the Staff Healthcare Committee meetings that the information we get in there is ready to disseminate to staff. So that's one reason why we had a special meeting on August 7th or August 2nd to talk about the FY14 design plans. And so you'll probably see two emails a month from me now with regard to the blog site, one after the staff council and then one after SHCC, so that we get, you know, feedback from staff with regard to healthcare and with regard to the design plan change and stuff, so that staff are really more aware of what's going on. And,
right.
And that was just because we weren't aware that it was okay to
put the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, that is a point to be made. The Joint Healthcare Committee meetings are closed. They are only open to the membership. So if there aren't any other questions on the SHCC, we'll move on to the compensation.
Just one quick question, because I had run into this. I was going to mention it, and I'm really happy that we're keeping our Staff Healthcare Committee open. But originally, Joint Healthcare Committee might have been closed because it was a union negotiating vehicle, if you will. But that was taken out of their responsibilities, sort of. So I'm just wondering if there's still a need to keep that closed.
Well, the charter is it's a closed meeting, but it's closed because it's my understanding because information is discussed. It's not negotiated in that meeting. That group comes together and then they'll make recommendations to the president. There's nothing negotiated in it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So the original reason for having it closed is no longer there, is my understanding. So
we can certainly raise that question, but I was informed as recently as within the last month that it's a closed meeting, they can do that because it's union meeting. So, I mean, we can certainly raise the issue, but...
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. At least they do put their agendas and their minutes available, which is very helpful, I think. But
I think part of it is they did, well...
Yeah, I don't know what the politics are. I was just asking if you thought it was useful to be able to bring it up, if there's still a need for that.
Well, I have brought it up. I was surprised. I was told I couldn't attend a meeting. I was shocked. I thought all meetings had to be public because we're a publicly funded institution, and they said no. This is a union-oriented meeting, our group. It's not. Doesn't have to be. So we can certainly follow up on it though formally.
Yeah, I think that'd be good just to raise the question if the original purpose for keeping it closed is no longer valid.
Okay. Any other comments on the healthcare committee? So the compensation committee, I think I told you, I mean, I did tell you, we're disbanding it and to get your membership request. And they have not had any, they've not met over the summer. We have a new mission for them as a result of the meeting last week. So again, if you're interested in serving, please send me the information. On to external UAF committee reports and Gary, master planning.
We've been, I think the one thing we had up on our last agenda since our last meeting of consequence was adding a new satellite out in right next to the one that's in the woods and trying to reorient the ski trails and stuff and try to make all the constituency happy, and they seem to be moving forward on that.
Okay. One thing I should do is, Nicole should have been kicking me, the external committee reports are a reminder for those of you that serve as representatives of the staff council on those that you get your reports in so that they can be attached so that when we're in situations as we are today where we're behind, we can move quickly through everything and everyone has the opportunity to review in advance and have questions prepared in advance. So what I'm going to do is a blanket statement at this point. If you've met, which you said the master planning is met, but if your committee is met, please speak up at this point and make a report. Otherwise, we're going to move forward because we don't have any committee reports attached today, correct? Yeah.
Ours is also, our notes, meeting notes should be on the web.
Okay. So Britton is not here for the parking advisory. CDAC has not met over the summer. Nicole, I'm assuming the planning and budget committee is done meeting.
Yes, they are.
Yes, and you provided us a report. I saw that.
Yep.
Debbie Coxon's not here. Accreditation Steering Committee, have they met?
No,
they've not met. The Meritorious Service Awards, I'm supposed to make an announcement on that that's open, and it has an August 31st deadline. So you all received an email regarding the Meritorious Service Award. Please review that and get it out to your constituents. And keep in mind that, as I understand it, the UAF campus has been sorely represented in this award. So let's keep that in mind when you're spreading the word about the August 31st deadline. Walker, TAB is?
Proposals are going to be due in mid-September, I believe. So.
Okay.
They haven't met. And work-life balance has not met for quite some time.
Okay. And Debbie and Britton are not present today. And the People's Endowment Fund, not met. John, communications, not met over the summer. All right, any questions, any further questions on item 13 and our external committees, 13 and 12? Hearing none, we can end today's recording. Unless there are further questions, we will end today's recording and go to the roundtable. Any other questions on agenda items? Online? Hearing none, then we'll end the recording.